You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of February 21st, 2017, and episode number 303. And this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Well, this week's news, we got a little bit of controversy. Yes, I'm going to stir the pot again. And some controversial stuff, a little bit here. Some belief-based things as well. We're going to talk about Bigfoot. Few stories here on Bigfoot, if I get around to it. Bigfoot to become a state symbol. This is an interesting story. And we'll talk some UFO videos debunked. And one of our controversial stories, CERN confirms that ghosts do not exist. Yes, that's an interesting story. Whoa, somebody just threw something at the radio. That's interesting. Flat Earth theories. Well, they have a new spokesman. That's another controversial thing. And we'll talk about Mammoth Park. Welcome to Mammoth Park. That's a freaky story. It freaks me out. It scares me a little bit. And we'll talk about that one tonight as well. We might also have some time for Bigfoot or Ghost. That's a scary one. This week's news is brought to you by Thomas Francis University. Thomas Francis University is a metaphysics school that offers online spiritually based bachelor's, master's, and PhD doctoral metaphysical degrees, as well as single standalone courses in related metaphysical and esoteric topics. Instructors are easily accessible and offer world-class customer service and instruction. TFU and other ICMH schools have hundreds of students and graduates in more than 50 countries worldwide. And for more information on Thomas Francis University, please visit tfuniversity.org. Yeah, a lot of stuff coming up tonight. Tonight here on WCJV. Some anomalous notes here. You might have heard me talk about this once or twice, maybe three times or four times. Yes, the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure. It's coming up quickly. May 5th through the 7th in Farmington, Pennsylvania. It's oh my goodness. It's going to be such a good time. That's why I keep talking about this event. Steve Cole, Stan Gordon, myself, Jay Baterchin, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, Ronald Murphy, John Sable, all speaking. And it's a great lineup. And that's just the speakers. There's also some other people that are going to be presenting workshops, other guys just hanging out, having fun, sharing their knowledge and information. I know that, lost my spot already. Trapper John Tice from Mountain Monsters is going to be there. Haven't heard if the rest of the gang is going to make it down there or not. A lot of good fun. We're going to have a cookout, some movies. And the good thing about the movies is people that have created movies are going to be there sharing their work for you. And it was a lot of fun last year. Lots of prizes, lots of giveaways. Don't miss this event. PA Bigfoot Camping Adventure. .com. Butch Witkowski from Phantoms and Monsters, Lon Strickler. He'll be there as well. UFO Research Center of Pennsylvania. Great guy, very knowledgeable in all sorts of stuff, not just UFO, into cryptozoology as well. He's been on this network a few times. He's hung out in the chat room quite a bit as well. So looking forward to meeting him. He was the first person, I think, Saturday morning. Well, when I set up after Eric Altman, of course, who's putting on this awesome event, Butch was the first guy that I talked to, and We hung out for quite a while, talked our cases and things like that we always talk about. And it's a good time. And that's one of the great things about an event like this is just meeting the people that are just showing up for this event. You don't want to wait. You want to get your tickets. Plenty of tickets available, but get them in advance because you're entering into a large drawing that's got all kinds of PA Bigfoot Camping Adventure.com.
Hello.
So you want to get into that. And right now we're going to talk to Maria Pinero, who's the Media and Public Relations Director for Ghost City Tours. She's got her hands in a couple of things coming up. I mentioned this last week, and she's here on the line to talk about it herself. So welcome to the show, Maria.
Thanks. How are you doing?
I'm doing really, really well.
Perfect. Well, yeah, we've got a whole lineup actually coming up this year. So we've got as much time or as little time as y'all got to talk, and I definitely have it for y'all.
Yeah, let's hear it. I mentioned the Ghost City Tours with the Andrew Jackson Hotel in New Orleans, Louisiana. And I did mention that it's two separate dates of two dates together. So you could either do it one night or two nights, I guess, which sounds kind of cool. It's probably something I would do.
Yeah, absolutely. So we do it two nights because some people, obviously, they want to stage an entire kind of a trip around it. So they're going to come on two different nights, and sometimes they even switch rooms. We did the first ever investigation there last July. It was so good, we're going back. But we had guests, like I said, that booked for one night, then they booked the other. They switched rooms. They wanted to see what activity would happen in different places. We have guests that just book one night as they kind of traveling from one spot to another. So we have it in April 24th and 25th, and then again in October for all those Halloween people coming down to New Orleans. So it should be a good time.
One thing I like is, I mean, a lot of tour companies allow you to use their equipment, but the opportunity to take home your digital recordings, I think that's a really interesting thing to put out there because people want their own evidence.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thing is that one thing that we try to do, especially whenever we do our ghost tours and our ghost hunts, is we really want to immerse our guests in that experience. So that's why we book out an entire hotel, or we book out, for example, the Myrtles Plantation. We'll be doing that in May. We really try to make sure that when people come on, like, this is an experience. It's not just an activity that you're doing for a few hours. And part of that experience is taking it home with you. So we're not going to just give you the equipment and say, like, all right, have a good time. And see you later. Once it's done, you're within 3 to 5 business days, we send out all of the recordings, and not just what you experienced, but every recording from the entire night. We always say, you know, say your name so you know which one's yours, and we'll mark them that way. So that way you can share with your friends, your family, you could post it on social media, something really cool happened, but you can take home that experience with you after it's done.
Yeah, I really like that. I think that's that really does a lot, because a lot of people, this is kind of one of their ways of getting into the ghost field. They're not sure about it. They see it on TV and they think, well, how hard can it be? I want to go experience
exactly.
It, but I don't want to work with a group. So a tour like this is, for me, I've seen some ones that are good and some that are not so good. But this one here, I really enjoy that tie-in with the evidence.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing that we try to do too is that, and it's kind of within that inclusion of that experience that we talk so much about, but it is a way for people to actually take those skills that we're teaching them and then take it home with them. So we do, last year, for example, when we did the Andrew Jackson, we had we had some like professional investigators that came from Seattle, from Washington, and flew to New Orleans with all their equipment to come on that ghost hunt. And
wow.
Then on the other hand, we had a mother and daughter who had never done an investigation ever. And they were just so excited and they wanted to know what was going on, what would happen to them. So we do, in addition within this, is we usually do some workshop, especially at the beginning, on how to use this equipment. So we're not just throwing it at the guests and saying like, all right, here you go. Feast for yourself type of thing. We really, from start to finish, we really want to show them, you know, what does a Melmeter do? What does a K2 meter do? And then it also helps that one of our investigators, Michael Bill, he builds actual paranormal equipment. So he always got something new, some new gadget that he's got with him, and he's showing it to the guests. And sometimes he brings a lot, and everyone really likes it, and they get to take that kind of experience home with them.
Yeah, I was going to ask you what kind of equipment you have, but I guess you kind of answered that. The Melmeter is probably one of my favorites. I mean, I use tools for their intended use, but there's no problem in using it in this kind of context just to get somebody excited about what's going on, which is, I mean, they're paying for entertainment, so it's part of the thing. But it's, like I said, I think this really helps get people kind of over that hump to where they're a little nervous about it. They're not sure how to take it. And then obviously you guys sound like you know what you're doing. You're talking about, you have this equipment and explaining it. That's, I mean, this is a really positive thing, I think, for the ghost field.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And we try to kind of try to flip it on its head a little bit too. We had done, we'll be going back again this year, but we had done an investigation at Hillview Manor in Pennsylvania. And one thing we were thinking about doing, we're like, you know what? The whole investigation is 7-8 hours long. We can take a half an hour, 45 minutes to try something new out. And all we gave all of our guests is we just gave them audio equipment. We gave them just recorders and we said, all right, go. We didn't give camcorders. We didn't give anything. And we said, we want you to actually sit, because sometimes the strangest things that happen to you is not when you're holding, you know, an obvious device. It's not when you're speaking into a spirit box or anything like that. It's just when you're listening and sitting. And so we had done that, I think, for about 45 minutes when we went there. Maybe it's something we might return to at some point as well, but every single person came up to us and they're like, you know, we experienced the strangest thing. We're kind of sad we didn't get a, you know, record it, but it just was mind boggling for people. So we try to experiment and play with how we do these hunts, not only to keep it fresh for people, but to also kind of push the boundary of what can be done and how do you actually communicate with spirits. So we definitely try to keep that a factor in whenever we do all of our investigations.
Well, I think that's a fantastic idea, because it's not like you're going out there to prove that ghosts exist or you're a team trying to validate anything. It's about the people that are there having their own personal experience, which unfortunately a lot of ghost teams are doing. But I mean, to go in with just audio, I think that's perfect, because sometimes the best things happen when you have the least amount of tech. So I think it's a very brilliant idea. And to, granted, you have to take who's there, because if you're a bunch of amateurs, it might freak them out a little bit, but
or they're going to think anything is a ghost.
Pretty much. And a lot of people, I found they feel safer when they're holding a piece of equipment, even though it doesn't do anything. They seem like, oh, I'm safe because I have this meter that tells me when they're around. It's like, okay, well, it's not going to shoot lasers out or something. But
exactly. You're like, it might help, might not. We'll see how it goes.
No, but that's really, I really like that, that idea of just kind of stripping away the tools and allowing them to experience, because that's what they're there for.
Yeah. They want to go home with that experience. And that's one thing that anybody comes on any of our investigations. And I think it's for any investigation across the country, whether it's with Ghost City Tours or not, it's the people that attend these events. They want that feeling. You know, sometimes it's people that are there and they say, you know, I've never had an experience before. I want that experience. And so you don't want to fabricate anything. You don't want to create anything. If it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. But we want to give them the tools so that they can do the best that they can to interact with spirits and ghosts and stuff like that and different entities, depending on where you're at and what place you're investigating.
So do you guys do like a historical work up, you talk about ghost stories or just the actual history of the locations?
Absolutely. So I'm actually the one, in addition to the public relations side, I do all of the historical research for every location we either investigate or that we write about on our website, or that's what I went to school for. So I'm the historian buff, and I'm the one digging through all the archives. And even for the Andrew Jackson, it circles with a lot of folklore and a lot of legends here in New Orleans, and it's spoken of as truth. It's cold, hard fact. Nothing about it kind of rang true for me. So it wasn't until I sat down and going through it, knowing we were going to do an investigation there, started pulling back all those layers and revealing actually what had happened there. And that kind of boosted also too for the hunt itself, was telling people, you know, this is what you're going to hear. If you take a ghost tour, this is the fluff that you're going to be given. And that's cool in terms of a legend, but if you're looking for actual historical accuracy, this is what happened. This is what the newspapers report. This is the letters that were found. And this is what we're telling you that actually happened and how it can correlate to what paranormal activity you might experience tonight.
Well, that sounds fantastic, because I've snuck on a few tours, not telling anybody that I've been in the field for X amount of years or anything. Just kind of listen to some of these things, and it's just, I just want to raise my hand and say, you know, you're full of crap, right? Like, the stories you're telling are completely wrong. And I know that even from, I'm from another state, and I can tell you that. But yeah, it's you owe the people the truth, I think.
Yeah, and that's how we feel completely.
And the truth is sometimes stranger than fiction.
Almost always. At least, I would say, at least in the cities that we operate, especially in New Orleans, that is definitely a hard fact. The truth is always so much weirder than what any story possibly could be made up about it. Except for the zombie baby story. It's a tough one to, I guess, overcome. Also not true, though. We do get that one frequently here in New Orleans.
Zombie baby. Well,
yeah, it's a strange one. I can't, no historical accuracy whatsoever. I don't know where it came from, but you'll hear it on tours around here.
So on my website, paranewsinsider.com, I have the Andrew Jackson Hotel, New Orleans, Louisiana.
Yep.
The two dates in April 24th, 25th, and the two dates in October 11th and 12th. And that's through ghostcitytours.com. So where else are you guys at then? I mean, Hillview Manor. I've been invited out there a couple of times.
Have you been? It's fantastic.
I frequent that area as a speaker. I speak at a lot of events out in that area. And a few teams have invited me, but I've not been able to get my schedule with their schedule kind of thing. But everyone loves this place. That's like the place to go in southwestern Pennsylvania. That's the place.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fantastic. I mean, it's like 50,000 square feet. I mean, it's huge. I mean, the entire property, I guess you could say, not necessarily the building itself, but we also cap our guests. So a lot of people I know, that investigators that go there, they'll have, 100 people all at once. When we went this past year, we capped it at 20, which meant that people were going in groups of 2 to 4 at maximum if they wanted to stick with their buddies. And we did that on purpose, because what good is going to a location if you're, jostled with shoulder to shoulder and you can't hear anything. You can't tell if it's someone coughing or if something's actually happening. But even one of our general managers, she was sitting over there and she saw just a shadow just dart right in front of her, to the point where she actually felt the cool breeze just whip right across her body, and she caught it on camera. So that place is special and definitely a spooky way though.
Yeah, I have to get in there then sometime. So
where we go, you're more than welcome to join us.
I was hoping you'd say that.
Yeah, absolutely. We don't have firm dates yet, but we're on our way to kind of firming those up.
So all this information is available at ghostcitytours.com, right?
Yep, absolutely. So we will have Hillview this year, the lineup. We will be returning to Old South Pittsburgh Hospital. I don't know if you've heard of that one. That's our our CEO, Tim Nealon, that is probably his favorite haunted location in the country. We return usually about 2 to 3 times a year just because he can never get enough of that place. But we'll also be going to Myrtle's Plantation in May. This will actually be the first time ever, actually, that although TV shows have certainly gone, like Ghost Adventures and stuff, this will be the first time they're ever opening up to a public investigation from a company itself, where we will have the entire space also in our guests.
Myrtle's, that's no joke down there.
Yeah. No, it's not. It's the biggest place to go.
So you're, I guess, constantly updating this then. You're getting new places all the time. So we just have to kind of keep track of this website. I probably have to have you on in a couple of months, maybe even.
Yeah, for sure.
Maybe in April before this next one takes place down at the Andrew Jackson Hotel. And maybe in the fall, I guess, for.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Knows what? Maybe you'll have more announcements for next year. And
we'll have a lot, as many as we can usually.
And all these are pretty much run the same way.
Yeah. So we always do our basic when you get there. There's the check-in. Some places you can stay the night, some places you can't. Depends. Hillview Manor, for example, they don't allow overnight guests. So it usually goes 7 or 8 p.m. till 4 a.m., which is their cutoff time. But otherwise, it runs that usually we'll have some sort of meet and greet so you can kind of get to know your, ghost hunters and crime for the night. And then we go over the history of the location. We make sure we nail that down. And then we proceed to go over all of the equipment so everyone feels comfortable how they're using it. We might even sometimes we break off into kind of groups to practice on what you're going to be using and how you're going to be doing it. And then from there, the first half of the night, we usually will always split into groups, but our investigators are with each group. So make sure everyone's kind of getting a feel for it. And then the second half of the night, we kind of let people kind of explore a little bit more on their own. And we do have the investigators rotating, but it's not necessarily as hands-on. So that way people can kind of experience it for themselves. And if they want to go with the investigator in whatever group that they're visiting, they're more than welcome to do so. So that's usually kind of a quick rundown of how it goes.
Sounds very, very good. Yeah, like I've said, I've seen some tours. I've been a part of some, and yikes, some really aren't all that great. They're not really put together very well. But you sound like you know what you're doing. I love the historical piece, and I like how you look at the not just got to get people's money, got to make up these stories, and you know, you're there for them to have the best time they can, but as realistic as possible, which I really admire that, because
we definitely do that. We really don't like to push the idea that anything is made up or fabricated, and sometimes that means that it might be slow for part of the night, but we like to make sure that people know going in, you know, that this is the real deal. This is not what you see on TV. This is not, you know, the stereotypical ghost hunt. We're really trying to get to the bottom of what's going on. And we try to get that feel across where, you know, people that are coming on these hunts, they're also helping us to discover more about these locations. So we try to make sure everyone kind of feels that and gets excited.
That's true, because it is pretty boring sometimes. I mean,
yeah,
people saw the reality of just sitting around doing really nothing sometimes, or hoping and wishing something happens and nothing happens. And then you spend all this money on a room or two or whatever, and almost for nothing, but yikes.
Yeah, that's why if the experience is there, then it becomes well worth it.
True. And like I said, a lot of people won't have this opportunity or have never had this opportunity. So providing them this avenue to discover or work with other people, it's for some people, this is actually like a once in a lifetime thing for them. So
yeah,
you know, it's a big investment too for, you know, for them, for mental sake, because this is, you know, challenging their belief systems or their fear and everything. So,
yeah, so we get both. We get cynics, we get believers, we get a mash up of the two, and kind of good that way. You know, it keeps it fresh.
All right. Well, I want to thank you for coming on tonight and talking ghostcitytours.com. Yeah, it's, I liked it when I heard it, but now I like it even more. That you've really explained all this stuff. So looking forward to hearing more about it.
Thank you so much. And like I said, anybody who's interested, they can just come on, look at our website or follow us on Facebook. We announce everything there first in terms of where we're going and what we're doing.
Awesome. Well, thank you again, and have a good night. I'll definitely have you on here again, if you're willing.
Perfect. Absolutely. Perfect. Thank you so much.
Okay. Good night.
Good night. Bye.
All right. That was Maria Pinero, Media and Public Relations Director for Ghost City Tours. You've heard a lot about their stuff. And like I said, paranewsinsider.com. You can click on the links. All that information is there on the site for the Andrew Jackson Hotel experience. Ghostcitytours.com for all the other events that they're doing. I really like that. I think that's going to be a lot of fun. And hopefully I can get out there myself and let you know how it is. Now we're going to cut to cryptid news. Some interesting story here out of the state of Washington. The state of Washington. Well, you know, state symbols and things, how some, you know, here in Ohio, we have the Buckeye as the state tree and things like that. Well, Washington, their nickname is the Evergreen State. Their state marine mammal is the orca. And the state fossil is the Columbian mammoth. State fish is the steelhead trout. And if Senator Ann Rivers has her way, Bigfoot will become the state cryptid. That's interesting. Senate Bill 5816 is designed to recognize, quote, immeasurable contributions to Washington State's cultural heritage and ecosystem, unquote, that Bigfoot has had over the years. Senator Rivers is not saying that Bigfoot is real, but that it is a curiosity to many, including children. And the goal here is to generate interest in the government and the systems that power it. Now, the idea for Bigfoot for the official state cryptid was actually generated from a third grader. Yeah, you'd think it'd be some investigator or something. No, a third grader wrote this in and said, hey, I got a great idea. So Ohio has a state juice, which is tomato juice. Arizona has a state firearm, the Colt revolver. And I know New Jersey there for a while had a state cryptid, the Jersey Devil. However, it's no longer listed on their website. It was only on, I think, 4 or 5 years, but it's already been done. But to have Bigfoot as the official state symbol, I think California might have something to say about that as well. But we'll see. It's you know how government is. It might take a while. It might just get kicked out. I don't see why not. I think it's kind of a cool thing. They're not going to replace the state flag. The state flag is the only state flag, by the way, that has a president on it. Washington. You know who he is. He's the reason for the state to be named Washington. I don't think they're going to put a Bigfoot on that flag, but who knows? UFO news. Scott Brando. I've mentioned this guy's name a couple of times. He's causing a lot of problems, but in a good way. Now, he runs a UFO website called UFOinterest.org, and he's been uncovering a number of UFO video and photograph hoaxes as of late. Imagine that. Well, this past week, he exposed a YouTube video that began as a UFO over Texas video and then suddenly showed up, the same video, a few months later as UFO over Normandy. And that is Normandy, France. In the video, we see a pair of flashing UFOs that just kind of seem to hang out there in the sky. While hopefully it's pretty obvious, I think, when watching this, that the video is fake, well, Scott went the extra mile and found the image that was used for the video. That's right. It was just a static image, a photograph. And that was from a blog post that shows Edinburgh, Scotland. That's nowhere near Texas. It's not even close. I guess kind of sort of close to Normandy, France, but different country. Now, in the original photograph, there's obviously no UFOs. The video was created by using digital editing software and making the image appear to move, which if you've seen enough of these, you can kind of tell the difference between a regular video and one that somebody's just kind of moving around. And obviously the UFOs were put in there. So one fake UFO video down and hundreds more to go. But Scott's been very busy lately. A number of stories that I've talked about videos being found to be hoaxes. He's been in the middle of these things, viral videos and things. You know, it's just really annoying. I don't know why people bother with this effort to try and convince people the UFOs are real by creating fake videos and photographs. I mean, let the evidence speak for itself. There's enough crazy things that are happening out there for real. Stop making them out to be nothing more than hoaxes. Little kids having fun here. I mean, there's enough startling stuff. I'd rather talk about that than these videos being faked and all these things. But it is what it is. Well, this story is kind of hard for me to talk about here. This is going to stir some heavy feelings. I think some people are going to get a little bit upset maybe, but I don't make the news. I just report it. So in ghost news, let me copy the link to this, share this in the chat room here in a second. Ghost news, a story. Yeah, I definitely think this is going to generate some heavy feelings when you hear what these people have to say. But it comes from the already controversial Large Hadron Collider. Uh-oh. What do they do now? Well, in addition to people thinking that CERN can create black holes, they'll blow up the Earth and all these other countless other conspiracy theories, well, we also have that strange video of the purported human sacrifice from last year. Remember that? And that adds to all the weird things that we have to question just what's really going on out there. Well, Brian Cox, an advanced fellow of particle physics at the University of Manchester, made an appearance on a radio show called The Infinite Monkey Cage to discuss paranormal and science. But before even starting, Cox stirred the pot by saying, quote, "Before we ask the first question, I want to make a statement. We are not here to debate the existence of ghosts because they don't exist," unquote. So to clarify his statement, he added, quote, "If we want some sort of pattern that carries information about our living cells to persist, then we must specify precisely what medium carries that pattern and how it interacts with the matter particles out of which our bodies are made. We must, in other words, invent an extension to the standard model of particle physics that has escaped detection at the Large Hadron Collider. That's almost inconceivable at the energy scales typical of the particle interactions in our bodies," unquote. So astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson, I'm sure you've heard of him, he's the Pluto killer, he said, he was also on the show, and he said, quote, "If I understand what you've just declared, you've just asserted that CERN, the European Center for Nuclear Research, disproved the existence of ghosts," unquote. So did he? I don't know. You're going to have to wait here a second, because I want to let you know that you're tuned in to WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVradio.com, and you're listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. We're talking about ghosts don't exist, according to CERN, the European Center for Nuclear Research. So Brian Cox made this statement. He comes on before even entering into a conversation on this radio show, The Infinite Monkey Cage. Cool name for a show. I got to check that out. I haven't listened to it, but I plan on it now because it's such a cool name. So he comes on and says, by the way, we're not going to argue about this because ghosts don't exist. Now, he clarified what he said by saying, quote, "I would say if there's some kind of substance that's driving our bodies, making my arms move and legs move, then it must interact with the particles out of which our bodies are made. And seeing as we've made high precision measurements of the ways that particles interact, then my assertion is there could be no such thing as energy source that's driving our bodies," unquote. So all that long-windedness, essentially that the Large Hadron Collider has not been able to detect any type of energy that would even come close to explaining how consciousness can survive the body, so therefore ghosts don't exist. That's pretty much what he's saying. Now, one could easily say absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. So just because you can't find anything doesn't mean that ghosts don't exist. That's kind of what some people have said about this story, but CERN does make a pretty solid argument in regards to evaluating particles' energy. I mean, if something was out there, they would have seen it. They would have been able to measure this. But now, if ghosts do in fact exist, they exist. What we know, you know, we define ghosts as something that exists beyond the known laws of physics. So that's kind of what he's saying, that ghosts don't exist because the laws of physics have not defined that. No kidding. We already knew that. That's why it's called paranormal. It's beyond normal, beyond the known laws of physics. So he kind of basically just proved what we already knew. Now, while I marvel at the achievements of the Large Hadron Collider, I don't think they've quite explained everything out there so far to this time. You know, I back them up on a lot of stuff, but this one, I mean, I see their point, but I can't really jump on that bandwagon. I think it's a really limited view of what ghosts are here when they're trying to explain this. And I've often said that ghost researchers should pay very close attention to the Large Hadron Collider because it's one of the sources of knowledge and information that's going to provide us a pathway in the future as far as ghost research. But this is not exactly what I had in mind that would be coming out of this. But I truly think that they will provide some clarity to this in the future, that something is beyond what they know, and they don't know everything. Science has not solved every single mystery, except for the following story. I can honestly say the following story, they have. They have proven this pretty much beyond the shadow of a doubt. So if you're in the chat room, appreciate you for being in the chat room and added some links there for the stories. Wow. And if you're not in the chat room, you're missing this really interesting graphic of me that they showed at the bottom of the hour of me holding a UFO. I like that. That's kind of zany. I like the tie there too. Crazy. Yeah, you're missing out on a lot of fun there in the chat room and the interaction with everybody that's there hanging out, having fun, listen to me and talking about all this spooky, scary stuff. Thank you, Dita. Oh, that was entertaining. But yeah, to this other news that about science. It's all about science. This next story just kind of, I don't know. I didn't intend to talk about it, to be honest with you, on the show. It's just something that popped up on the news feed. And I was blown away by this and threw it on my personal Facebook page. I didn't put it on the Paranews Insider Facebook page, just my personal one. And lo and behold, I was, I guess you could call it trolled. Somebody came on my site and trolled me over this and was trying to convince me that this is true. And I don't know. I kind of thought I made my thoughts on this pretty much abundantly clear. That it wasn't a debate in my head. But here we go again. This is something that's popped up from time to time. It doesn't seem to go away. And it seems like it's a fad right now with celebrities. Well, what am I talking about? Well, now another celebrity has stepped up and proclaimed that all that we know is wrong. We're being lied to. Science is lying to us. NASA is lying to us. It's all fake. Now, you might have heard of Tila Tequila. Well, last year, she feared for her life on Twitter. She proclaimed my life is in danger because I've just exposed the truth. It's a lie. Now, professional basketball player Kyrie Irving might know where I'm going now. Well, he made an announcement prior to the All-Star game, I guess All-Star game weekend. This is probably the most entertaining piece of the entire weekend. The slam dunk contest was okay, but the game was horrible. You saw the game. But Kyrie Irving made an announcement that the Earth is not what we know. It's not what we think. It's not how we image it. It's not how we picture it in our minds. It's not what we see in our books. It's not what we see on television. No, that's all wrong. It's a lie. The Earth is flat, and he knows it. He knows it. He's got proof. The Cleveland Cavaliers point guard's statement came during a radio show where the hosts began asking him about extraterrestrials and conspiracy theories. I was excited at that point. I thought, well, this is a good interview. And this was during the Road Trippin' with RJ and Channing podcast. Well, Kyrie proclaimed, quote, "This is not even a conspiracy theory. The Earth is flat. The Earth is flat." And he was serious. Well, that was an unquote before that. He's serious, but he was serious about this. Now, a couple of people told me that, oh, he was just kidding. He was just kind of stirring up the stuff and talking about fake news. Well, no, he's serious. He was serious about this. Now, he blames the fact that we're spoon-fed knowledge and that history is altered at times and how we're supposed to take what we're told is truth. Well, I get that. History has been kind of manipulated over time, and what people know as facts isn't always correct. I get that. I completely agree with it, but it's one thing to question the government's knowledge of extraterrestrials and facts about history, but simple observations made well over 2,000 years ago that validated that the fact the Earth is round. It's not flat. Well, it's close to round. It's not exactly round, but it's not quite a ball. But it's pretty close. Much better than flat. Now, many claim that photographs of the Earth are altered or are even created as hoaxes. It's all CGI. It's all fake. Now, Draymond Green, who plays for the Cavaliers' rivals, the Golden State Warriors, now he stated, quote, "But how do you know that the picture is telling the truth? I can make a round picture with my iPhone on a panoramic camera, make it look round. So I don't know," unquote. I'd like to launch him in space with his iPhone and see what he sees. I mean, I'm just amazed. My brain hurt when I was thinking about this story. Like, people actually believe this stuff. Now, I mean, I get it. I have nothing wrong, nothing against these people believing what they're saying. It's just when some of this, some of their evidence, some of the stuff that they talk about. I mean, put it another way. I believe in the potential for a lot of questionable things. Obviously, I'm on a paranormal show. So some things that science says do not or cannot exist, like we just talked about ghosts. I mean, I'm sticking up for the ghost people here against CERN, scientists, physicists, people that make a lot more zeros on their paycheck than I do. And I'm saying they're wrong to a certain extent, but the Earth is flat. I mean, wow. Now, according to Eric Dubai, author of The Atlantean Conspiracy, 200 Proofs the Earth is Not a Spinning Ball, which is not the book of the week. Now, he says if Earth really is spinning, bullets fired upwards would land hundreds of feet westwards. They don't. If Earth was constantly spinning, airplanes would never be able to reach their destinations due to the 500-mile-per-hour headwind. And he also says if Earth really was a globe, airline pilots would constantly have to adjust their controls so as not to fly off into space. If Earth really was spherical, helicopters would be able to hover in place and wait for their destinations to come to them. If Earth really was a sphere hurtling through space, the water would be wobbling all over the place instead of staying flat. And so on and so on and so on. I could go on and on, but I think you get the point there. Unquote, unquote, unquote. Some interesting points made here. And if you type in flat Earth or flat Earth truth or flat Earth science or whatever, and you'll see all these memes pop up and, you know, click images on Google or whatever. And I love some of these. I've seen one of my favorites is when it shows the far side of the moon and the Earth in the same shot. This is a fairly new photograph that just came out. And it's weird to see because we're not used to seeing this kind of context and this perspective of the Earth and the moon here. Now, the question is asked, if there's 13,000 plus satellites orbiting Earth, along with a lot of space junk, then why are none of them present in the photo? I mean, wow, bombshell, NASA exposed. Even the United Nations is in on the game. If you've seen this meme, all you have to do is look at their logo, the United Nations logo. It perfectly matches a flat Earth map. Wow. I mean, game over. That's it. Flat Earthers rejoice. That's your proof. It's done. It's over. The Earth is flat. You proved it. I mean, with a meme, it's proven. Forget the science. I mean, it's, wow, a meme. It did it. And I think, I don't know who said this. It might have been Tila Tequila who said, if a skyscraper is on a globe, then it should tilt, right? I mean, these are the kind of things that it just makes my brain hurt. Now, a lot of people who believe the flat Earth theory center their argument that Masons have planted this information to discredit the Bible. Their arguments within it make no sense, such as there's not even any gravity on Earth. They think that. A lot of these flat Earth people think there's no such thing as gravity. It doesn't exist. And other statements that are based on personal judgments that defy logic and actual science. Now, Neil deGrasse Tyson, we mentioned earlier, said during the Anthony Cumia show, he said this, I think this is the best statement, really. It just kind of sums it up, non-scientifically, of course. He says, quote, this is a deep failure of our educational system, unquote. Now, he essentially said that the educational system pours knowledge into us, but does not enable us to think enough to discover the truth for ourselves. We're just kind of told what to think. We're filled up with facts. So that we can pass a test, which is true. It's not enough to instill critical thinking, which leads to beliefs like this, it leads to a lot of crazy beliefs and a lot of crazy things. I mean, you could even throw UFOs and ghosts in there, but you know, a lot of us are looking at this logically as well. But I agree with the educational system is it's kind of geared just, you know, getting us to pass a test. When it really comes down to it, that's all it's about. That's it. So we can't rely on science. NASA, I mean, they're in on it. They're in on the cover-up. We can't rely on them anymore for anything. Now, researching this, and I did research this. I wanted to be fair. It's not the first time that I've thought about the flat earth theories or have done my own research into it. When I was a kid, I actually had a friend of mine, his family had told him that the earth was flat. And their reason for this was they're very religious. So religions kind of have this thing that obviously it goes against science. So science and religion have always had their little issues with each other. So it's part religion, part conspiracy theory. You know, everyone loves a good conspiracy, and many major religions believe that science is flat out wrong about everything. So when you put them both into a little glass and you give the two a gentle swirl in milk, this is what happens. Enough on that. We're not talking about that anymore. It's just insane. The earth is not flat. I can tell you just from traveling, just from simple observations of sun and the moon, and you don't even have to go up in an airplane to be able to tell that there is a horizon, and it does go over a little bit. But then again, I lived near Lake Erie, which kind of helped that little observation stuff out. But I tested it as a child too to see whether or not science was correct. And you know, I don't believe everything science says either, but I do kind of back them on that. Well, that being said, we're going to go into some scary science, some science that I don't agree with. I think this is bad stuff. The woolly mammoth is back. Yeah, the creature that looks like a hairy elephant with these long curved tusks. Well, they're soon going to be wandering around Europe again. Sort of, maybe. I don't know. Now, Professor George Church of a team of Harvard geneticists are looking to what they call de-extinct the woolly mammoth by creating a hybrid of the mammoth and its closest living relative, the Asian elephant. Church states, quote, "Actually, it would be more like an elephant with a number of mammoth traits. We're not there yet, but it could happen in a couple of years," unquote. So the team has been working at the cell stage and has been aiming to replicate the mammoth since 2015, but has now pressed on toward the embryo stage. Now, they're using a gene editing tool named CRISPR. CRISPR, it's like a cereal. To splice certain traits of the mammoth into existing elephant DNA. Now, this sounds wonderful. I mean, what could possibly go wrong? I mean, I don't want to do this, but I'm going to quote a movie in this situation. I know it's silly and pointless, but my feelings about this mirror that of what Dr. Ian Malcolm said in Jurassic Park. When he said, quote, "Your scientists were so preoccupied with whether they could, they didn't stop to think if they should," unquote. Well, that's not a very good Dr. Ian Malcolm impersonation. Anyway, first things first, they're not planning on impregnating a living elephant, if you were wondering. So they're not going to, you know, put altered embryos in some poor elephant, unsuspecting elephant is going to give birth to this hairy little baby. Not happen. That's not what they're doing. A lot of people are fearful of this. When the project first started, the team stated that they would have artificial wombs to test things out initially. Now, one of my arguments about this is the woolly mammoth had their day. They went extinct. They went extinct due to changing conditions here on Earth. And the mammoth steppe, which is where they were located, that stretched across Northern Europe and Asia. And that changed from being hospitable to them to not being able to sustain them. These are cold weather animals. They live in extreme cold. Obviously, they're hairy elephants. Very thick skin, very thick fur. They're not going to hang out in Arizona, something like that. So did man play a part in their extinction? Maybe. You know, they did exist at the time when man was just kind of learning about fire and how to kill things. You know, we've perfected that nowadays, but this was in the early stages of man. And yes, they were hunted, but that would only account for small populations and just a part of their enormous territory that they had back in thousands of years ago when they were around. Now, the last holdout for the woolly mammoth was Wrangel Island. Now, that's off the northern coast of Russia, which held around 500 to 1,000 mammoths that had been isolated from the mainland for about 4,000 years. And everywhere else, they were dead. They were gone. So why would you want to bring back a creature that would essentially have nowhere to actually live? One of the initial statements of the team is that the long-term intention is to breed existing elephants to be able to live in colder climates so that they can remain protected. That's a noble statement. I get it. It makes sense on the surface, but at the same time, it kind of angers me a little bit. So what you're saying is we have to change the animals. We have to change their DNA in order to move them away from humans. Huh, okay. So instead of like not allowing people to kill them for ivory, we have to change their DNA and we have to alter these animals forever and move them away, move them to Russia, let them run around and drink Chernobyl water. I think that's crazy. So we have to hide them from ourselves, essentially, so we won't kill them off. That's what you're saying. That's just one of the stupidest things I've heard. I mean, apart from the flat earth stories, I'm sure there's got to be more meaningful ways to spend money on DNA research. But I guess, you know, it would be really cool to see a living woolly mammoth. I agree. But I think after that wow moment, after, you know, that excitement, that ooh and the ah, I think you would understand that it's really just a genetically created creature, and it's not the actual real living thing. We'll never see that again. They're gone. I mean, what's next? Bringing Neanderthals back so some people can have meaningful conversations about flat earth stories? Meddling with DNA to create more edible meat on fish and cows. That's what's going on now. I mean, that's one thing. It grosses some people out. And yes, we're breeding cattle, dogs, and many other domesticated animals in a way to favor certain characteristics. That's been going on for centuries. That's nothing new. But this is a whole new level. Trying to create new creatures from existing ones, that's a little dangerous. It's a little irresponsible, I think. Now, there's talk about the passenger pigeon, which was forced into extinction by overhunting for their feathers, the thylacine, and other animals that have been considered for this genetic modification in order to bring them back into existence. But I ask you, is this really necessary? Since Dolly the sheep was cloned back in 1997, it's now become routine for horses to be cloned for racing and breeding. You might not have known that, but that's something I uncovered while researching this story. Scary stuff. So all these award-winning and Triple Crown horses and all this stuff, they're cloned. I mean, how fair is that? That's just creepy. Now, it's just a matter of time until the tinkering is done on humans. I mean, the stories didn't say it, but I'm saying it. How long until this stuff starts happening on us? Because essentially, that's all they're doing. They're tinkering with these animals so they can tinker on us in the end. And I'll tell you what, that will be the beginning of the end for sure once they start tinkering with our DNA like that. Okay, I got to take a breath on that. So that being said, that leads us to the book of the week, which kind of went in a different direction this week. Decided to talk about science instead of, anomalous this and paranormal that and UFOs and cryptids and all those great things that are still great books. Don't get me wrong. I just felt that this week we had to talk some science. It was just long overdue. And the book of the week this week, it's a book I actually got for Christmas last year. Yeah, I get books for Christmas. My wife knows. She knows how to take care of me. I mean, books and things. I mean, she knows. She knows what I like, and she doesn't agree with all the things that I enjoy or believe in. She doesn't believe in all that stuff, but she knows that I question things, and she knows that I'm always searching for answers, even though I sometimes act like I know everything. But this is a great book, and I learned quite a bit. It's when you first see it, which I'll throw the cover on the website here, so y'all can see that there on the chat room. When you first see the cover, it looks a little, I don't want to say childish, but it looks like kind of like a kid's book. But reading it, I was pleasantly surprised. There's a lot of great facts and information in this book. And the book is called Strange But True Science, 150 Answers to Questions You Never Thought to Ask. And on the front cover of the book, there's a couple of these things. What makes a firefly's butt glow? How do you hypnotize someone? Why does Swiss cheese have holes? Who invented the match? Do we know what's in Earth's core? And can you walk on hot coals without burning your feet? We talked about that one once. It's questions like that fill this book, and it creates a very entertaining, page-turning book. It's broken down. This book actually came out, before I get too far ahead of myself, actually came out last year. Came out in November of 2016. This is 2014. Okay, 2014, I guess. Well, it's still kind of new. So the information is fairly up to date. And it's broken down into different chapters. Space oddities, not-so-natural world, freaky food facts, human ingenuity, healthy, wealthy, and weird. Everyday mysteries, the body, strange and odd things about animals. And just, I mean, it's just filled with weird information. Here's a question here. Who invented the computer mouse? And what else do we have? Are there robots that feel love? Can you grow your own penicillin? How long can you live without sleep? 36 hours. What is face blindness and hypnotism? Why do wet things look darker than dry things? A lot of weird questions like that, my goodness, it's things like that I like to know. And it's a pretty big book. It's 272 pages. The only comment I have negatively about this book is there are no resources for this knowledge, this information. So you kind of have to take it as fact, as it is what it is. Why do space shuttle astronauts wear parachutes? That is a scary story. And, you know, it may look like a kid's book, but some of the material in here, I don't want to say it frightens you, but it's the truth, I think. It's some of the stuff I already knew, like about the astronauts wearing the parachutes, unfortunately. I knew about that. Some of the stuff I already knew about, but some of the stuff I didn't. And it's some really out there material. Some of the stuff I ran to the computer and had to look up to see whether or not it was true. And it was true. So there's a lot of great material, a lot of great stuff in here. Here's a great question. How far do you have to dive underwater to escape gunfire? I'm not going to tell you. It's in the book. Buy the book. It's great stuff. And it answers some simple questions as well as if you have kids, you need to explain things to them. Why is the sky blue? Well, there's a perfectly good answer in here. But they don't. One thing that's not in here, they talk about why the compass points north, why the sky is blue. Why does the mercury rise or fall and the temperature? But they don't talk about, is the earth flat or is it round? But a picture on the front of the book, I think, spells it out because it shows the earth with the trunk kicking out. So it's good science, and it will expand your mind. If you're into science, even if you know a lot about science, there's a lot of stuff that I learned that I didn't know, like I said. So it's a great book, and you will learn something from it. And it is available on Amazon. It's not that expensive. It's for a new book. And I think I got it as like a stocking stuffer. But it's a great book. And I've read it, I think, a couple of times. And got a couple of little tabs in here on some really interesting factoids. And it's a good book. And again, that's Strange But True Science. I got to stop reading it. Strange But True Science. I don't even know who wrote this thing. There's no author's name on this thing. Uh-oh. I'm not sure. Interesting stuff. Anyway, Strange But True Science. You can find it on Amazon. Buy it, read it. Science is good. Science is not the enemy. Science is not the enemy. They're trying to, I mean, they're not perfect. I mean, come on. They don't know everything yet. They're getting there. We'll help them out, right? Ghost researchers, investigators. We'll do what we have to do out there in the field to get them going. One other story I didn't quite have time with to kind of talk about here. I'll mention it briefly. Why not? I don't know if you saw this. This story came out last month, and I blew it off. I said, that's silly. That's ridiculous. I don't see what you're seeing. And I thought it would just go away. All of a sudden, this story's like, it's everywhere again. It's like a big deal. Well, this story is about a picture. People see stuff. They think they see something, or they take a photograph and they see it later on. And they, oh my gosh, I saw this thing. Well, you didn't see it. You saw in the picture after the fact. This lady was walking around. I believe this was in Northern Ireland. And her dogs kind of went a little nuts. And she was taking pictures. And suddenly, after the photo was developed, she saw what she thought was Bigfoot. Doesn't look like Bigfoot. It looks like trees. And other people commented that they think it's ghosts. And one of the dogs is a German Shepherd. Can't remember what the other one was. So a miniature Schnauzer. Now, German Shepherd, she thought that it saw this Bigfoot. Now, if a German Shepherd feels that their owner is threatened, they're going to do a little bit more than just stand there and stare. I'm going to talk more about this story, I think, next week when I have a little bit more time. It's confusing. It's just all over the place. And I actually had to get up and walk away from the story when I first started reading it. One word of caution. I'm going to throw this link in the chat room. And if you dare open this story, again, caution you, as you're scrolling down, be aware that there's a very large photograph of this woman staring at you. That's a little spooky at first. I'll talk about that story a little bit more in depth next week. So you got something to look forward to. Wow, it's going to be the end of February already. Sad. It's really going by fast. My goodness sakes. So, anyway, I thank Maria for coming on the show, talking about her stuff going on down there in New Orleans, Louisiana, and all over the place. Marinero from Ghost City Tours. And again, you can find all that information at paranewsinsider.com. Click on the events tab at the top. All kinds of events there. I've added a few, altered a few. I was wrong on a date on one, which is kind of rare. I don't know how it happened, but I'm glad somebody pointed that out to me. I think somebody else did, but I just kind of blew it off. But yeah, I'm not perfect. That's why, I don't know. But thank you for finding the error, and I'm glad I got it fixed. And I did add a few more. And all of these things, they're a lot of fun. So get out there, enjoy yourself, have fun out there, be careful. And big thanks to everybody who tuned into the chat room tonight. I appreciate you being there for me. It means a lot. And I appreciate you, you, the one that just downloaded this. I appreciate that. Listening to this on a Thursday evening instead of a Tuesday night. I get it. You're busy. I know. But here I am. And big thanks to Cindy for producing this show, and Dita in the chat room, I guess, for that awesome graphic. That was cool, by the way. And everyone else that was in there. Paul for helping out in there as well. Keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.
You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.